Merkel Media.
This was all circulating around the base that a giant had been killed, but no one was supposed to talk about it.
I saw three long bony fingers reach up underneath the door, curl up to grab it, and then disappear.
When he came over to me, dude, he slithered over to me.
And this giant comes out of the cave and they're all frozen. And he starts running and firing at this giant. But the giant moves. He's got a spear in one hand and he's running really fast and spears Dan and holds him up like this. Somebody yells, shoot him in the face, shoot him in the face. They basically decapitate him.
Got closer. When he got about 15 yards away from me, I raised that 12 gauge and I blow this head off.
I feel something pulling at my leg. And I look over and there are two small gray entities pulling at me. And they're literally, I'm getting pulled off the bed.
I reached my hand into this bush and I touch air. Couldn't breathe and I couldn't move because I know I'm seeing a monster.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to the Confessionals Podcast. I'm your host, Tony Merkel. Thanks for being here. If you have a crazy, wild experience you want to share with me on the show, go ahead and shoot me an email. My email address is contact@theconfessionalspodcast.com. That's contact@theconfessionalspodcast.com. Or go to the website, theconfessionalspodcast.com, hit the contact section, and you can reach me that way as well. Either way works for me, just get a hold of me. If you want more shows on a weekly basis, we have you covered. TheConfessionalsPodcast.com/join. Become a member to the website and you get access to the Thursday bonus shows, Tuesday shows ad-free, and the overtime segments when they're available. And that's all available on the Confessionals members app. If you're on YouTube right now and you're like, I am not interested in doing that, that's fine too, because you can become a member on the channel. Same content, different location. Just hit the join button if you're an Android user. And if you're an Apple user, go ahead and hit the link in the description. You can get access to all that good right here on YouTube. All right, friends, we have Jerry Marzinski coming on the show today. And Jerry is somebody that I've heard about for a very long time. He works in the mental health industry. He's actually a mental health professional. And he, throughout the 30, 40 years of his professional career working with people and patients, he's come to the understanding that there's a large amount of people who are diagnosed schizophrenic who are not schizophrenic and are actually communicating with entities. They're actually having entities within their bodies communicating with him. It's crazy. He has some really wild stories that he's going to be sharing with us today where these entities did not like the fact that he was asking certain questions and prodding, and they asked the person that's hosting them to be able to directly speak to Jerry. And what happened after that is just crazy. So let's get to Jerry right now. All right. Today we have Dr. Jerry Marzinski on the show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, except for the computer.
Yeah. Listen.
Pong, boom, dangle, but
this happens. This happens. You know, when we talk about these kind of topics, it happens. And I'll tell you that because you and I felt like there's a couple of times we were about to launch into conversation before we started recording. So I just like, let's just start recording. The first time this happened to me, I had a friend who was talking about similar things that you're talking about, just from a little bit of a different angle. Maybe, I'm not sure yet. But he told me every time he's talking about this on somebody's podcast, that their system starts glitching and the recording gets, you know, messed up or whatever. And I told him, I was like, because I heard him and he's my friend. I love him. He's, you know, all that. But I was like, we'll see what happens. So I said, why don't you come down to the studio? We'll do it in person. Ain't nothing in the glitch. We'll get your whole thing out. And He comes down, we do a 2-hour recording and one mixer board later, because he whatever we talked about fried my mixer board. I had to buy a brand new one. And so every time I do an in-studio recording, behind my guest is a shelf, and you'll see the mixer board I used to use sitting on the shelf. It's just now as a decorative piece because it doesn't work anymore. This stuff happens a lot.
No, at this point, if something doesn't go wrong, it's abnormal. I mean, it's like every time I talk about this topic, something goes wrong. It might be small, maybe as big as, you know, the sound goes out or the video goes out or the internet goes out. I mean, it's always something. There's always something.
Yeah. No, it's becoming a frequent thing for me as well. I think it's because I'm hitting on a lot of these types of topics more often. And, you know, we'll see how things go today. I want to say that you, so first of all, let me just back up here. Jerry, you are a retired psychotherapist, 40 years. And one thing, I was reading through your bio, one thing you said that you studied at Temple University. Are you from the Philadelphia area? Did you just spend time there in college? Because I just moved from there.
No, I was raised across the river in Burlington, New Jersey, okay, by the Burlington-Bristol Bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I traveled from there to Temple University every day.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, because me and my family just moved from the Philadelphia area to East Tennessee 2 years ago. So when I saw Temple,
good
I was
move.
Like, yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not no dummy. I mean, I'm not the brightest guy in the shed, but
you know. Good move.
Yeah, the city of zombies now. So anyways, I just wanted to make sure that I hit that because I wanted to see if we're from the same area. It turns out we are. So that's cool. So you are somebody who has popped up on my show over the years. And it's a name that has been brought to me in conversation. And it's one of those things where you hear it, but then you forget to look up the person and look into the person. And I forget now who most recently was talking about you, but we got connected, and it's just been, I feel like, a long time coming. And when you and I were just talking here before we started this recording, I said to you how I want to dive into the how you came to discovering the truth behind schizophrenia. And I was kind of like doing it softly, and you're just like, it's all messed up. And I was just like, okay, I didn't want to be stepping on your toes. You know, you're the one with a doctorate, you know? So,
I don't have a doctorate, but
okay. Well, you know,
I got halfway there toward one before I said, this is bullshit. I can't deal with it anymore.
I got you.
Two years. I'm thinking, well, they must be hiding the truth in the PhD programs. They don't tell the master's level or undergraduate. The truth must be in the I got up there. They don't know shit. They don't know nothing.
Listen, I agree. So there's a lot of things that I have beef with when it comes to mainstream anything, really. And I have a really hard time when you have people who are saying they know, but they have such opposing views of other people who are looked at as highly intelligent people. I'm like, well, if you guys can't agree, then how can I know that any one of you actually know anything? You know, I mean, at some point there's got to be a real truth here, right? I mean, and it just seems like people can't agree on stuff. And I'm just like, well, I'll just figure it out myself.
Well, the proof is in the results. Bottom line, if it works, it works.
Yeah.
You know, and the stuff they're teaching does not work, you know, and the foundations of what they're teaching is not the truth. So it doesn't work. I mean, we're spiritual beings. I mean, without the spirit, we're just a lump of matter. I mean, and they completely ignore that. You know, they, in what was it? 8 years of psychology, counseling and graduate school, they never mentioned spirit once.
Really?
No, not really. Never. You know, never. You know, wow. And they didn't want you reading kind of spiritual type stuff. I mean, it, to me, what it felt like, especially in the PhD program, was like brainwashing. Mm. I mean, it was just the same thing. They put you in this pressure cooker, turn up the heat, and then you will do this and you will do that. And, you know, it's like the overall feeling was like we're gods. Your upcoming gods and everybody else is below you. I mean, that was like the unwritten message in that doctoral program.
Man, that's.
I don't think they're all like that, but the one I was in was like that.
I mean, I'm sure there's plenty like that. Just when you look at the attitude that, I mean, for me, maybe from the outside looking in, the attitude that you see from that realm of the world where, you know, the doctorates and all that, it just seems like we'll tell you what to believe and just trust us because we know we're doctorates. And it's
that started off even in undergraduate school. Mm. That's one of the biggest things that irked me about undergraduate and at Temple University. You'd have all these psychology textbooks, but except for experimental, you couldn't go check out anything. You know, just believe us. This is all true. You know, and, I remember, first of all, I don't trust authority at all. I never did. I mean, ever since I was a kid. Second of all, I'm an adrenaline junkie. Without those two traits, I would have never got to where I was in exploring this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because at times it got terrifying. But you know, one of the first things I ran into at Temple University was, I think I was taking an abnormal psychology class, and they assigned a paper written by a clinical psychologist. Okay. That paper said if two crazy people met each other and they both had the same delusion. So if both of them believed that they were Trudeau, one of them would have to change their delusion to something else. And even as an undergraduate, I didn't know anything back then. I go, why would that have to happen? They're both nuts. Why would one have to change so the other one could be this other thing? It made no sense. But I had no way to prove it. You can't go ahead and try to get into a mental health center or a private psychiatric hospital or a state psychiatric hospital. Tell them, hey, I want to investigate schizophrenia. I want to talk to these guys. I want to see what's really going on. You'll never get in the door.
Mm.
And the 40-some years I spent working on the front lines of mental health, I never, ever saw a researcher, any kind of researcher, on the front lines actually looking at what was happening. They won't let them in. So all this research comes from the universities, which were taken over by the Rockefellers back in 1910. You know, when they made with the Flexner Report, they made it illegal for universities to graduate anybody who didn't graduate from a pharmaceutical kind of curriculum. Okay. So it all revolved around drugs. You know, all the other things went out. I mean, electric therapy, naturopathy, all these different kind of treatments were all kind of sidelined because Rockefeller paid off the Congress and they passed these laws called the Flexner Report, saying you got to teach pharmacological medicine or you can't graduate students. And that put all the universities on the chopping block, you know. So they had to start teaching what these people were telling them to. The big pharma has taken over the university. They virtually own the universities at this point. You know, if you don't teach what they want you to teach, your grants dry up. If you want to publish something that goes against their medication garbage, you know, they won't publish it. You won't get reviewed. They have a lot of power, and they're not in your best interest. They're to make money. That's all they want to do, make money. They'll sell you any kind of drug you'll eat as long as they get money.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we've been seeing that pattern a lot through the last several years. And I think it's becoming a more and more common understanding of this industry, and it is an industry, you know?
Oh yeah.
You're the author of an amazing journey into the psychotic mind, breaking the spell of the ivory tower. And what I would like to do is, and the link is going to be in the description of this episode. And
here's what it looks like.
If you're watching right now, it's right there on the screen. Throughout your professional career, you started connecting these dots, and there were certain specific situations that you found yourself in that just left you feeling like, okay, so I'm actually communicating with something, or there's actually something tangibly communicating through this person that is not just an imaginary thing in their brain because they're crazy. I would love for you to kind of share your story of how you went through this process of discovery, because for years on my show, I talk about these different types of things and the spiritual realm, and how I think that a lot of schizophrenia is misdiagnosed. I don't even say a lot, like, because I don't know, but I did believe that schizophrenia, there was a lot of a room for misdiagnosis because of the lack of adherence to a spiritual realm. And I've had one or two ladies on the show in the past, at least two ladies in the past on the show that were studying to be psychologists and go into this field because they believed that very thing. And they felt like the industry was not doing these people justice. So
no, it's not.
With that said, I would love for you to kind of just launch us into this process for you of how you kind of came to this understanding and that, you know, these are not just voices in crazy people's heads.
Yeah, that took years before I got to that point, you know, and I didn't want to believe it myself. So, you know, when I got onto the front lines, the first job I had was at Central State Hospital in Milledgeville, Georgia. This place was most likely the biggest psychiatric hospital on the planet at the time. There were like 10,000 patients there. I mean, it was the size of a small city, you know. But, you know, I started into... Let me start at the beginning. I started into telling you about that paper by the clinical psychologist saying two crazy people who had the same delusion, one of them would have to change. And it made no sense to me. I didn't have access to a clinical population, neither do anybody in undergraduate school. So you can't check out what these people are saying to you. You can't go see it for yourself. For the most part, except in experimental psychology, you can go into the rat lab and you can see those things working. But fast forward maybe 20 years from that point where I read that article, I was on the first floor or second floor of a psychiatric unit. I was watching a guy talk to himself. So he's talking to his voices. And what they told us in college was the voices are hallucinations. They didn't say anything more about them. You know, it was, they're hallucinations. You know, they're auditory hallucinations. It means they're hearing something. But they didn't go any deeper into that. And I heard this guy talking to himself, carrying on a conversation with these voices. And it wasn't word cabbage. It wasn't word salad. I mean, this was a coherent, semi-logical conversation. And, you know, it was like listening to one side of a phone call. You know, you could hear what the person was saying, but you couldn't hear what he was hearing back. So I started kind of creeping up on him, getting close so I could hear the conversation. And he turns around to me and he looks at me and he caught me. And I said, hey, I'm Jerry. I'm the psych for this unit. I haven't seen you before. Are you new? He goes, yeah, I just got here a few days ago. And I said, what's your name? And he looks me in the eye and he goes, I'm Jesus Christ. And I thought for a second, you know, back to that that article from the clinical psychologist. And I said, no, you're not Jesus Christ. I am. And I stood there going, what's he going to do?
Wow.
I'm sitting there watching him. What's he going to do? You know, so he kind of cocks his eyes up and he looks and he goes, thinking about it. And he goes, then he looks at me and he goes, okay, we can both be Jesus Christ. And then he walks off. And I said, okay, they printed that lie. What else are they lying about? You know, so that was like, okay, they're lying. They're not telling the truth. It didn't make sense in the first place. You know, but once I got to that state hospital, other things started not making sense. Okay. You know, and it was clear that the voices that these patients were hearing were affecting them in a negative way. You know, if they're listening to these things, they got into trouble, they got into fights, they got into arguments, they would break the rules, they would do all kinds of stupid, crazy stuff. Yeah. When the voices were active. So they drug them silly. So they're walking around like in a half daze, and it's hard to get into trouble when you're a zombie. You know? And that was what the hospitals loved most about these drugs. They didn't have to have a lot of staff to wrestle these guys into straitjackets. You know? They just drug them, and then they were docile. You know, even though they were still hearing the voices, they weren't acting on them. They were too sluggish to act on them. So I'd start asking, you know, staff who'd worked there for decades before I got there, well, what are the voices? Well, they're hallucinations. You know, virtually every single one of them, they're hallucinations. You know, well, what are they telling these patients? Well, I don't know. They're hallucinations. Nobody was interested. I mean, there were many hundreds of staff there. Not one of them was interested in what these voices were telling these patients. Yeah. So it was like, why? You know, why? Why wouldn't they want to know? Why wouldn't they be curious? That they were all brainwashed in graduate school and medical school. They're hallucinations. That's it. Believe us. We're the authors. We're the professors. We're the psychiatrists. Not one of them has ever done a study on the voices. Not one. It reminded me of the Egyptian priests of old. The voices are hallucinations because we say so, and we're psychiatrists or we're professors or we're whatever we are, not having looked into it at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not only that, they didn't want you looking into it, because there were twice I was caught asking patients at the state hospital what their voices were telling them. One of the patients got upset, or I should say the voices got upset that it was prying into their territory. And they had the patient go complain to the psychiatrist, and told the psychiatrist, hey, man, this guy's asking about my voices and he's upsetting me. I don't like it. Next thing I knew, the next morning, I was in front of that psychiatrist on the red carpet being told the voices are hallucinations. You will not ask these patients about them anymore, because what you're doing is reinforcing their hallucinations and making them worse. And I'm looking at this guy like, you know, but he can't say anything to him, but they're so arrogant, it's incredible. They're like little gods out there. You know, so he was full of it. I knew it, but you couldn't talk back to him. So both times that I was caught by psychiatry trying to figure out what these voices were telling these people, I got in trouble and I was threatened. Okay. So they don't even want you going there. They don't want you asking any questions. So the next thing I knew from asking them, there was a pattern that appeared. And this pattern was the voices were consistently and persistently negative. You know, so if they're a hallucination, you would think, okay, they'll be positive sometime, they'll be negative sometime, they'll be in between sometime. They'll run the gamut, just like hallucinations do. They're all over the place. You can't predict what a hallucination is going to do or what they're going to say in a hallucination. It's random. No, this pattern started appearing. The more I asked these patients, what are these voices like? What are they saying? It came out that they were consistently and persistently negative. They never said anything neutral. They never said anything good. It was always negative stuff. And it was stuff that would incite negative emotion. It would upset them. Okay. And I'm thinking, okay, well, what is it that holds these voices on such a negative trajectory? You know, why aren't they random like other hallucinations? That didn't make any sense. Yeah. So, you know, here's this abnormality that pops up that just didn't make sense in terms of what the establishment was saying. The second one I found was they said schizophrenia is due to a chemical imbalance in the brain of the patient, and that causes the hallucinations. But one thing I noticed that was very odd was that if it's a chemical imbalance of the brain, you would think they would have some way to measure what chemicals were out of balance or by how much. You know, you need a baseline. If it's an imbalance, what's the baseline? What do you do to balance it up again? It was years I was there, and I never, ever noticed a psychiatrist give any kind of lab work, clinical test, you know, blood work, EKG, EEG, nothing. They gave no kind of objective test to determine what chemicals were in the brain of the patient were out of balance or by how much. Never. You know, and I would watch them, how they operate. I'd be sitting next to them with my client, and they'd evaluate them. You know, they'd make their diagnosis, and then they just kind of, okay, we're going to start you on this. Totally subjective. There wasn't any objective factor to it at all. It was all subjective. You know? So one day I asked one of the psychiatrists, I said, well, if this is a chemical brain imbalance, I don't see you guys giving any kind of test to determine what's out of balance or by how much. How do you know what's out of balance? And they say, oh, we don't worry about it. The drug companies tell us. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I did. I went, oh my God, that's like letting the fox in the hen house.
That's wild.
You know, it's like, I couldn't believe it. You know, but that's how they were operating. Turns out they have no objective test to determine anything about what the chemical imbalance of the brain is. They don't even know what the chemical balance of the brain should be. It was made up by Eli Lilly back in the 70s when they came out with Prozac to try to explain why their drug worked. It was a complete fabrication. It was a total lie, but Lilly ran with it anyway. And they're still advertising this same garbage, even though it's been disproven over and over and over and over again. I pulled up an article not long ago from one of these big, you know, fancy hospitals saying, oh, it is believed that schizophrenia is caused by a chemical imbalance of the brain. Or it's suspected. So they're still pushing that, you know, even though they know it's a lie. You know? So that was the second big fallacy I saw. You know, they didn't know what the chemical imbalance was. They didn't know what was out of balance. They didn't even know what the chemical balance of the brain should be. All right. So I kept, I had to be careful at the state hospital because, you know, the psychiatrist, they didn't like me asking questions about the voices. So I had to kind of stay under the radar, which really interfered with things because I couldn't ask too many questions. I had to be careful not to upset these guys with my questions. And I always had to be careful. The other thing I saw at the state hospital was psychiatrists were being beat up by schizophrenics at a rate far in excess of attacks on any other staff except for attendant staff that were with them 24 hours a day. You know? And I was wondering, you, because we back then there was no internet, so we had the food factory, this big building that prepared food for this entire giant hospital complex. So the staff would meet there every day for lunch, and that's where all the grapevine was. And, you know, time after time, it would be, hey, this psychiatrist got beat up in this unit, and this other psychiatrist got beat up by a schizophrenic in this unit. And after a while, it was like, well, what are these guys were only spending like 15, 20 minutes a month with these people. You know, I'm like, what are they saying to them in 20 minutes that they're pissing them off enough to get beat up? You know, what's going on there? It was a puzzle for years. It took me 7 years to figure that one out. So I think the psychiatrists at that hospital were afraid of these people. You know, they didn't want to do anything to upset them. And that was kind of like the unwritten rule at that state hospital. Don't do anything to upset these people because you don't know what they're going to do. They're potentially dangerous. You know, I never saw that. I mean, I didn't see them as dangerous as what they were painting them out to be. Okay. So 7 years later, fast forward 7 years to finish this little story. There was one girl who was schizophrenic. She was studying cosmetology to be a beautician. Right? She was doing good. She was taking her meds. She went off the meds twice and went psychotic twice. Okay. So those meds weren't curing anything. They were just suppressing symptoms. Right. If at that psych rehab center, we had kind of an unwritten rule that if they went off their meds three times in the center where these meds are being handed to them and they're watching them take them, if they go off them three times, they're not going to stay on them in the community. And that's the only thing that was keeping these people sane at that time. We didn't have anything else. We didn't know about anything else. And apparently they didn't want us to know about anything else. So if they went off their meds three times, we would discharge them. So this girl, that was the third time she went off her medication. She was doing good in class. She was making good grades when she took her pills. She would have made a good cosmetologist if she would have stayed on her meds. But she was slated to be discharged because she went off her meds a third time. So I contacted her mother, and her mother virtually begged me, please don't throw her out. I can't deal with her here. I'll come up there and we'll talk to her and find out why she went off her meds. And I'll work with you. So I said, okay, all right, come on up. So one Friday she came up. She was in my office, called the client in, and both of us are sitting there going, you know, why did you go off your meds again? You knew if you went off them another time, you would be discharged from the program. Why did you do it? She goes, you won't believe me. You know, I said, you know, I heard some really strange stories since I've been here. Trust me. You know, I don't think you could tell me anything that's going to shock me. And she goes, well, okay. She said, the voices were telling me that the psychiatrist was poisoning me. And they were pointing to the side effects of the medications as proof that I was being poisoned. And those side effects are horrible. You know, they're awful. There's pages of them. You know, all these negative side effects. So it looked real to her. And in fact, she was being poisoned because these drugs are toxic. You know, what they found was with autopsies from people from state hospitals that were on long-term meds like this, when they did the autopsy, they saw that their brains were shrunk like walnuts. And they're going, well, what's this all about? So the researchers who did that suspected it was the antipsychotic drugs. So what they started doing was feeding them to rats and mice and monkeys and found out they got the same results. So when they published these results, the psychiatric mafia and Big Pharma went nuts. Oh, no, it's not our drugs. It's the schizophrenia that's doing this. The schizophrenia is causing their brain to shrink. Yeah, believe us. You know. You know, they had the proof. Those drugs are toxic. They shrink the brain like a walnut. They destroy the peripheral nervous system. Okay, so they are slowly destroying the nervous system on these people with these drugs. And I don't even know if they're even aware of it. You know, now they know that when they get akinesia and they start shaking like this and their tongue starts darting like that. They know they have to cut back on the antipsychotic drugs. That's a toxic effect of these drugs. Yeah. So that explained why psychiatrists were getting beat up at a rate much higher than any other staff at the hospital. As if the voices were telling these patients that they're being poisoned by the psychiatrist, that would explain it. Okay. So there were just so many things that just didn't make sense. Now, a second pattern appeared before I left the state hospital. So I worked there for 7 years on the front lines at this large psychiatric hospital. The second pattern that showed up that was very strange was that these voices were anti-religious. So I would talk to clients, and they would say, hey, when I walk into the church, the voices go nuts. They don't like me being there. And I went, well, that's odd. And what kind of hallucination would be anti-religious? What kind of hallucination would stop people from going to church? You know? So I started asking them more and more questions. It turned out there were like three categories of this. If the voices were very weak and they went into a church, the voices would disappear. If they were moderate strength, they would get stronger and they would start mocking the preacher and saying he was a bozo. He didn't know what he was talking about. You know, and they were interfering with them listening to the preacher's sermon. Okay? And if the voices were very strong, they would actually drive them out of the church. They would get up and run out. You know? So I talked to scores of these patients, asking them what happened when you went into a church, or what happened when you tried to read the Bible. And one thing that was interesting with the Bible is the voices didn't like them reading the Bible. They would say, oh, this is a bunch of crap. It's ancient stuff. It's ancient history. And if the patient insisted that they wanted to read the Bible, the voices would say, okay, you have to read it from cover to cover. If you're going to read the Bible, you have to read it from cover to cover. So the patient would go, okay, I'll read it from cover to cover. And they'd start reading it, and they'd hit that section where this guy begat that guy, begat this guy, you know, for pages and pages of who begot who over hundreds of years. And then the voices would show back up and go, look it, this is garbage. Why are you reading this trash? This is trash. You know, this is stupidity. Stop this. You know, and a lot of them would stop at that point. One guy came in and told me when he recited the 23rd Psalm that the voices reacted like worms thrown on a hot frying pan. And I found that interesting. So anytime one of them told me something like that, I would log it down, and then I would start asking others. You know, I didn't just believe one guy. I would start asking dozens and dozens of others. And it turns out that the other schizophrenics also had, the voices went nuts when they started to try to pray. And they specifically hated the 23rd Psalm. So I started handing it out to schizophrenic patients and saying, well, read this and tell me what the voices do when you read it.
I love that.
It was always a negative reaction. The voices hated it. You know, they would go nuts. They, you know, start screaming and hollering and raising Cain, and they just didn't like it. You know? So what kind of hallucination would be anti-religious? Okay, so here's two major patterns. Now, anybody working with schizophrenics, anybody who has one in their home, I mean, this isn't like what the Eli Lilly and Big Pharma did. You know, first they... this is the operational definition of schizophrenia, these patterns. Okay. So what Big Pharma and psychiatric mafia and what they did is, well, first they started explaining it by, they blame mothers. Okay. Oh, the mothers did something to the kids that made them schizophrenic. You know, it's a mother's fault. So the mothers would, we didn't do anything. What'd we do? You know? So they couldn't find anything there. They dropped it. So what they had to do was move it up out of the purview of the public and most doctors and researchers. Kick it up somewhere where people couldn't, debunk it. So the second thing they did is, oh, well, it's genetics. It's genetics. The schizophrenia is genetic. There's a genetic predisposition, you know? So what they did is kicked it up into that territory. And who's going to investigate that? You know, psychiatry isn't going to look into that. Guys like me aren't going to look into it. You got to be a geneticist to look into something like that. And when the geneticists finally started getting around to looking into it, you know, it was decades after they made this stipulation. So here they're getting away with it by explaining schizophrenia as a genetic abnormality. When the geneticists began to look into it, they go, hey, we don't see anything. We don't see a genetic gene. There's nothing there. You know? So they went, oh, well, it's not just one gene. It's a bunch of genes, and they're all interconnected like this, and you'll never figure it out, but we know it's due to genes.
But we figured it out. You won't figure it out, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we'll figure it out eventually. We know it's due to genes, and we'll untangle it, and then we'll have the answer. You know, bull crap. You know, they had no genetic proof at all. And even though there might be a genetic predisposition, that doesn't rule out other factors like the way a schizophrenic mother treats a kid. That will install schizophrenia in a lot of cases. There's a lot of other explanations than that. So the genetic thing was blown. They needed something else now to explain schizophrenia and get a disbelieving public to believe in their toxic drugs once again. Okay, so they went to the chemical imbalance theory. Okay, there is no chemical imbalance. They didn't like that either, but they're still pushing it because it sells drugs. All right. And it's been disproven over and over and over again. So as I went along, more of these patterns started showing up. So I really couldn't get down to any serious research until I went to work for, I got out of the, I got out of the PhD program, moved to Arizona, and have worked for mental health centers and worked for county hospitals. Finally, I took a job with the state prison in the psychology department. You know, it was there that I was really able to do some serious research into what's going on with these voices. Okay. What are they? You know, and I started doubting that they were hallucinations, but I had no explanation for, well, if they're not hallucinations, then what are they? You know, so there were tons of schizophrenics in the prison. What they did is Proposition 13 in California, they felt they were paying too much taxes, property taxes, so they refused. It was a tax rebellion. So the state went, okay, well, then we're going to have to shut down the state hospitals. So they did that. They dumped all these guys out on the streets, and now you can see them hanging around the street corners in Los Angeles and San Diego. They're all sleeping on the, you know, they're homeless. They're sleeping on the ground. They have no money. They can't function. You know, but the state hospitals were closed down. And then they started committing crimes to survive, so they got moved into the state prisons. That whole population went from the state hospital, where it was relatively inexpensive to keep them there. You know, low-cost housing, these units were not glamorous by any stretch of the imagination. And they move them into a prison setting. Now they're paying a whole lot more money to keep the same guys controlled and confined. You have to pay for security systems. You have to pay for guards. You have to pay for counselors. You have to pay for all this other stuff, you know, the fences, the barbed wire, the electronic stuff, much more expensive to keep a schizophrenic in a prison than it is in a state hospital. Okay? So the prison started filling up with schizophrenics, you know, and by then I was tired of working with them. I was just burnt out. I mean, it was like I was beating my head against the wall and getting nowhere except these few patterns. And, so when I got there, I went, okay, here they are again. And there was nothing, you know, I was developing programs, but it was still like a puzzle to me, is what is going on in the heads of these people and what is driving them? So what I did is I got a group of them around me that were willing to tell me in real time what the voices were telling them while we were in session. Okay. So the agreement we had is, listen, I'll help you out as much as I can. You know, and they were as interested as I was as to what these voices were. You know, both of us were, they were interested. I was interested. Neither one of us really know what they were. You know, they were experiencing them. So I had a group of maybe 12 or 13 of these prisoners who would tell me what the voices were doing around me at all times. So it was like real time. The patient would say, well, the voices are telling me this. And I'd say, well, okay, tell them this. And so I was able to kind of carry a conversation on with them during those times. And these conversations were completely lucid and coherent, but the content was always very nasty. You know, it was like they were mocking the patient. They were trying to control him. They were calling me names. They were interfering with what I was trying to tell the patient. You know, it was clear that there was a conscious entity there. Okay? I didn't understand its nature. I knew at that time that it was negative. I knew it was anti-religious. And what I noticed next was this voice, or these voices, would work to create negative emotion. They would foster and create negative emotion. Okay. And I also noticed, before I ever got there at the when I was working at the state hospital, is every time the voices showed up and attacked the patient, their energy level dropped to almost nothing. The same thing happened in the prison. So 2,000 miles away from Georgia, here's the same patterns appearing in schizophrenics in the prison. Okay? The voices were negative, they were anti-religious, and every time they appeared, the patient was devoid of energy. Their energy level dropped to nothing. Okay? So it was like there was a one-to-one correlation between the voices showing up and their energy level dropping. Okay? So I'm like, what's with that? You know, it was like, and I would point this out to the patients. They didn't see that correlation. It was strange because a lot of them had been hearing the voices for years. So we're talking maybe tens of thousands of times the voices came and attacked them. And each time they were attacked, their energy level dropped to nothing. And they could sense that, but they couldn't make that link. You know, they couldn't make that correlation. Yeah. So when I tried to point it up to them, I'd talk to them like, okay, every time the voices come, your energy level, after they leave, your energy level drops to nothing, doesn't it? I go, well, yeah. I said, well, what do you think is causing that energy drop? They go, I don't know. I have no idea. You know, I'd say, well, if you stuck your hand in a fire 1,000 times and each time your hand got burned, what would be burning you? They didn't have any trouble with saying, well, oh, it would be the fire. But then you turn that around and you go, well, if the voices came 10,000 times and each time you were drained of energy every time they came, where's your energy going? Or what's affecting it? Well, I don't know. They just couldn't make it. They couldn't make the connection. Yeah. Some of them did, and that's what they need to know. You know, these things are parasites. These are energetic parasites. They're feeding off these people. They have to turn their emotional state negative before they can take their energy because it's a very low vibrational energy. These are very low vibrational entities. Okay, so they are parasites. So we're not the top of the food chain. Okay, and the way they attack is they will put thoughts. See, psychology, psychiatry don't study the mind. They don't study thoughts. They have no idea where thoughts come from. They don't even look at it. They go, well, we can't measure it. We can't study it. We can't talk to it. We can't see it. We can't. So we're just staying out of that area. We'll study behavior instead. They don't realize that behavior comes from thought. You know, the thought comes first and then the behavior. So in order to understand the behavior, you have to understand the thought and where the thoughts are coming from. Yeah. I had no idea where thoughts were coming from at that point, but I knew they were coming from outside the patient because they would tell me that. You know, okay, I'm hearing this now. They're telling me this now. You know, so what it looked like was the brain was a radio receiver for these entities. Had a bunch of different frequencies, and it was stuck on a very low frequency channel. Okay, so they were able to pick up these entities, and so that's what it looked like. And that's, you know, I would tell them these things, and they would agree that yeah that's kind of what it's like. So they would, what happened would be, in the prison, it would be pattern after pattern after pattern would show up, okay? So what these patterns were is like, you know, if you got a big magnet with a big, heavy magnetic field, okay, and you're just sitting it on your desk, you can't see that field, you can't taste it, you can't touch it, you can't feel it, you can't sense it in any way. So for all practical purposes, it doesn't exist unless you know about it. So if you took it into, you know, people 200 years ago, showed them this magnet, they wouldn't know what it was. You know, it's only after you put a piece of metal in there and it gets stuck to it, then you can see that there's something operating there. Okay. So with a magnet, if you get a bottle of iron filings, and you put it on the magnetic field, now you can see the shape of the magnetic field. Okay, now it appears. Otherwise, it's not perceivable. Now, that these patterns are the same thing. These entities are energetic. They're energy. There is no time. There is no space. There is no matter where they exist. You know, they can go through things. They can go into your mind. They can put thoughts into your mind. You know, and they put thoughts in your mind that upset you, like you're no good, you're rotten, you're ugly, you're stupid, you're dumb. Every rotten thing that you can think of is coming into your mind from these entities. You know, any negative thought about yourself, Sherry Sweeney said, any negative thought about yourself or anybody else comes from these entities. So they can insert thoughts into your thought stream, and they sound just like your thoughts. So it's not like when they're active, you hear a voice that goes, oh, I'm the voice and you better listen to me because I got to tell you some stuff. It's nothing like that. It sounds just like the thousands of other thoughts that come through your mind on a normal day, only the content is very different. Okay. And they hit us all. It's not just schizophrenics. They hit everybody. And one example I show is, you know, here in Arizona, most people don't have lawns. We just go out in the backyard with a machete and cut down the cactus to keep them from overgrowing the place, you know. So I'm out in the backyard with a machete and I'm cutting down cactus, and I have a beautiful white husky dog. And she's running around back there, and as I'm cutting cactus, and she runs right by. Here she just appeared. She runs right by, and here's this thought comes into my head, like, cut off her head. And I'm like, what? You know, what? You know, it's like, I'd never do anything like that. I would never think anything like that on my own. You know? And I was shocked that this thought even came into my head, and it upset me. That's how they operate. Everybody has those kinds of thoughts. You know, you might be driving down the highway and you go, I wonder what would happen if I turned into the traffic. Or I wonder what would happen if you're standing on the edge of a bridge and you jump off the bridge. Okay? I had a very good preacher said he was standing on the edge of the Grand Canyon and he had a thought jump into his head, jump. So they hit us all, and they hit us all by putting negative, nasty thoughts into our minds. And then they try to get us to act on those thoughts as if they're our thoughts. So what I found interesting was a lot of these prisoners would ask the voices, who are you? What are you? What do you think the voices would say?
I know I think they are. I don't think that they're going to admit that, though.
No, they won't. What they said, we are you.
Ah.
They want the patient to believe that that thought belongs to them, that they are those thoughts that are being inserted into their head. So if you think you're your thoughts, you're screwed. Okay? So you look at all the crap that goes through your head on a regular day. You know, all this stuff you know, all this stuff you you think about, all this stuff on the radio, the television, it's constant chatter. If that's you, then who is listening to that? Your thoughts are not who you are. So if these things can get the patient to believe that their thoughts are them, that those thoughts belong to them, then they can turn that patient into what the voices want them to be, which is violent, nasty, abusive, insensitive, callous criminals. You know? The more pain they cause to others, the more they like it. They thrive off of that pain that they cause to others. Right? And they thrive off the pain they cause to the patient. You know? They feed off of that. So we're not the top of the food chain here. So if they can get the patient to believe what they're telling them, and the patient believes that every thought that comes into their mind is them, is who they are, then they turn into what these voices want them to turn into, which are psychotic criminal psychopaths.
Wow.
You know, so these patterns kept coming and coming and coming. Okay. So the voices, they foster and create negative emotion. They energetically drain their victims. They get louder after sunset, which is odd. They get loudest between 3 and 4 in the morning. They get louder when ignored. Okay. So they will not be ignored. I remember sitting in with a psychiatrist at the state hospital where the patient was telling him, well, you know, the voices are still there. And the doctor goes, well, okay, I'll increase your meds. Just ignore them. They're hallucinations. They're not real. You know, you can't tell somebody who's experiencing these things that they're not real. I mean, to them, they're very real. Okay? So he tells him, well, just ignore them. So, you know, I call the patient in 2 weeks later and I ask him, like, well, you know, I was in there with you when the doctor told you to ignore the voices. How'd that work for you? So it doesn't work at all. They got louder. So then I started asking others, what happened when you tried to ignore them? All of them said you can't ignore them. They just get louder and louder and louder and more persistent. They will not be ignored. Okay? Another pattern. Okay? They foster self-destructive behavior. You know, I have all these, a number of clients that we had at the psych rehab center who were studying to be these vocational classes, to be auto mechanics and janitors and beauticians. You know, the ones who were hearing voices, as they approached succeeding in their schooling, they would do something that completely messed them up. They'd attack somebody, they'd scream at the teacher, they'd start throwing things, they'd do something that would sabotage them. Okay. And that happened time after time after time as they were approaching succeeding at their classes. It was like almost to be expected with people who were hearing voices. So they foster self-destructive behavior and virtually they are behind virtually every suicide of a schizophrenic. So schizophrenic suicide at 5 times the rate of normal population. And what's interesting, so do psychiatrists. Their suicide rates are virtually identical. Okay. And the thought behind, oh, go ahead and kill yourself, are the voices. They're telling schizophrenics that all the time. Just go, just kill yourself. You know, that creates a lot of negative emotion. An awful lot. And they feed on that. Okay. They foster isolation. Schizophrenics don't like being around people. They want to be off to themselves listening to these voices. That's the worst thing that could happen. You know, is for them to be isolated. They need to be active. They need to be doing things. They need to be doing hobbies. Because if they're just isolated and the voices want them isolated, so you know, what happens in a typical family is when the parents say, hey, we're tired of you sitting around just, you know, looking at the TV or staring at your walls or locking yourself in your bedroom. Get out and do something. The patient, the schizophrenic gets abusive, you know, and starts a fight. And then it gets so intense over and over again that the family goes, okay, get out of here. Leave us alone. Just go in your room, stay there, and don't come out. Just don't bother us. Just stay there. Yeah, you know, that's exactly what the voices want.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's the worst thing that could happen. You know, the voices demand the attention of the victim. They're constantly moving to obtain more and more control. Okay, they're constantly fighting for more and more control. You know, and I've talked to a number of patients when the voices first started off. They would start off by saying, "Hey, pick up that pencil," or "Walk over to that chair." Sit down, stand up, you know, simple commands. It was like somebody learning how to drive a car. Like, how much control do I have here? You know, it was like they were experimenting with how much control they had. So that goes on and on and on, you know, them trying to take more and more control until you have these psychotic killers that just, you know, run out into the street, start shooting people randomly. Okay. They gaslight. They manipulate perception. Now, the other thing they do is they have pretty much complete access to the schizophrenic's memory. They can go in there and they can pull up every rotten thing the schizophrenic did and say, hey, you remember when you did this rotten thing? You know, how do you feel about that? You know, So they, what they do is they stir the pot constantly. They want them feeling bad. They want them feeling guilty. They want them feeling sad and whatever negative feeling they can generate. Okay. So I'm not going to go through all these. There's like 23 of them. But the bottom line is, if the voices are running patterns, which they are, you know, they can't be hallucinations.
Yeah.
Hallucinations don't run patterns. So you can go to my website at jerrymarzynski.com, go to articles, and pull up a list of all these patterns that these voices run. And these are fixed patterns. And it's not just one schizophrenic that runs them. It's virtually all of them. You know, the schizophrenics in Georgia, in the state hospital in Georgia, were hearing the same voices running the same patterns that the one they're hearing here in Arizona. And now that I'm working worldwide, it's the same thing with people in other countries. Wow. These are the same patterns. Now, these patterns are the operational definition of what the voices are. Okay? So it's like the magnetic, it's like the iron filings in a magnetic field. This is what they are. Okay? Now, psychiatry is not even in the same ballpark. They're still believing these things are hallucinations. They're still teaching that in the colleges and the graduate schools. They're teaching it in the medical schools. They're teaching it in psychology. None of what they're teaching is helping anybody. Those drugs that the psychiatrists are dishing out are not curing anything. You know, the psychotherapy that they're teaching in the universities is not curing anything.
Yeah.
So there is one system that has come up, and it's called the MACE energy method. This system will go in and it will remove psychological problems. It will get rid of them. It's because most psychological problems are caused by trauma, and that trauma is buried in the subconscious and it stays there. So it's like a computer virus in your brain. It's not evident. You're not aware of it, but it's working on you. It's affecting your behavior in a negative way. Okay. So instead of taking psychiatry's drugs that don't cure anything, you know, you guys can go and look up a Causism Institute. It's called www.causisminstitute.com. That's CAUSISM. Institute.com. There you can read about causism. Now, the guy who came up with this was not a psychiatrist or psychologist or a social worker. He was fascinated with how the mind worked. And he spent his whole lifetime studying the mind and how it operated until he got to a therapeutic system that actually worked and actually solved psychological problems and got rid of them. Okay. And it happens very quickly. And it happens because these entities and thoughts are energetic. Okay? They're not physical. They're energetic. In the energetic universe, there is no time, there is no space, and there is no matter. Okay? Your thoughts are energy. Your memories are energy. Your feelings are energy. You know, your thinking is energy. This is all energy. And all psychiatry is doing is drugging the brain. You know, so it's like pouring syrup into the radio receiver. You know, it'll gum it up. So it's like you're like, but it doesn't cure anything. Now, they're not going to want this system getting out, which is the reason I mention it. Because instead of taking their toxic drugs, go and try a MACE practitioner. You know, this stuff actually works. And I was waiting my entire life for something like this to show up. Matter of fact, one of the other practitioners was talking to a clinical psychologist that was going, well, where's this been? Where's this been all my life? You know, go, well, you know, it's just coming out right now. So you have psychologists that are now signing up to become MACE practitioners. Right? So This will get, and if it doesn't get rid of the voices, it will get rid of a lot of the stuff that feeds the voices. So it'll make things better. It works. So running these patterns, back then I was going like, okay, I see patterns appearing. And I'm like, okay, what'll happen if I start throwing monkey wrenches into those patterns? Okay. So I started experimenting with that with the groups of prisoners I had. I said, try this. Try it for a week. Come back and tell me next week the effect it had on the voices. You know, and I was always asking these guys questions, question after question after question. What are they saying? What are they doing now? How are they reacting to what I'm saying? How are they reacting to the exercises I gave you? So it slowly started showing up that they didn't like monkey wrenches being thrown into their patterns. And that started showing up by one after another of these guys showing up and saying, the voices don't like what you're doing. They don't like this stuff. They don't like you interfering, you know, and they're getting pissed off with you. So one shows up and says that. And they didn't know each other. They, you know, it was a pretty big unit. They didn't know each other. Another one would come in later on. The voices are really getting pissed with you. You know, they don't like this. Then another one, then another one, then another one. You know, and then I'm like, okay, I must be on the right track. So if they're not liking it, that's good. I'm going to throw at them whatever they don't like. Now, you couldn't do that in the state hospital because if one of them went off, then they'd come running to you. What'd you say to him? What'd you do to him? How come you upset him? Wasn't the same at the state prison. You know, it's like if one of these guys got upset and he went up to the warden and said, oh, the psych told me to do something and I didn't like it, or he was asking me too many questions and I didn't like it. You know, the warden go, get out of my face, man. Go play in the traffic. Get out of here. You know, they wouldn't pay any attention to it. The whole prison system was set up for people getting upset. It was designed to handle that.
Yeah.
So, you know, the only risk I was taking was, you know, kind of prodding them. But the way I was raised, my dad had a nasty temper and he was irrational a lot of the time. And I couldn't fight him physically, but what I could do is drive him to the verge of insanity and then back off and just leave him with the load. Okay. I became very good at that. That's the way I fought back. Now, the consequences were disastrous if I made the wrong judgment. If I pushed him just a little bit too far, the whole load would come down. And not only would that load come down, but all the loads that were built up behind it would come down also. Yes. So the consequences for making a mistake in judgment as to how far I could push him were catastrophic. But it was the best training I could have ever had for working with schizophrenics. There was no better training anywhere. You know, the whole undergraduate school, you know, the graduate school, there was no better training than that. So what I was able to do was push these guys for information to the point of them exploding and then back off with the information they gave me. And that came in very handy when I was working the last 10 years, when I was working psych crisis in the emergency rooms. You know, in order to make the diagnosis and see how bad this guy was, how dangerous he was, that was an invaluable asset. So in the prison, I would use it. I'd push him until I got all the information I could get out of them. And that was very useful because I got a lot of information. So one after another, they started showing up and going, the voices don't like you. They don't like what you're doing. They don't like these exercises you're giving us. And you know, okay, one after another. And I'm going, okay, they don't like it. Tough crap. You know, let them go jump in a lake. Then one day when I was finished with one of them, he turns around in the doorway. He looks at me and he goes, you know what you're doing is dangerous, don't you? And I never thought about it. You know, it's like, and I'm just looking at him. He's looking at me. And I'm like, where did that come from? And he turns and he walks away. And I'm like, what was that all about? You know? So just like with that other, I tucked it in the back of my mind. It didn't stop me. I went, okay, just keep that in mind. But it didn't stop anything I was doing. Okay. So I kept throwing monkey wrenches in these patterns. You know, the 23rd Psalm was one of them. You know, every time you hear the voices, you know, say that's a lie, because they're consummate liars. They lie about everything. You can't trust them to follow through with anything that they say they're going to do. And it gets so bad that there were two patients where they told them, gouge out your eye and we'll go away and we won't ever come back. The patient gouges out his eye. He's now a freak. And they show up immediately. So they start laughing at him and mocking him and saying, well, you listen to us. That's how stupid you are. You know, that's what you get for listening to us. Jeez. And they start laughing at him and mocking him. You know, that's how vile these creatures are. You know, they're very nasty. So that was the first warning shot. Second one was sitting in my office one day, and one of these people I'm working with comes and gets in. I don't know how they got past the guard, but they got past the guard. They come knock on my door. I open it, and I said, well, you know, I don't have a pass for you at this time. He goes, oh, that's all right. He said, I just need to talk to you for a minute. He said, the voices want to talk to you. And I said, they want to talk to me personally? He goes, yeah, they want to talk to you personally. That had never happened before. In like, you know, 25 years, that had never happened before. It was always the patient would tell me what the voices were saying, and I would respond, tell the patient, well, tell the voices this. It was never a direct conversation. Okay. So I said, okay, come on in, have a seat, close the door. Got in my chair, and I said, what do they have to say? And these words came out of his mouth. You have no right to interfere with our way of life. Boom, just like that. You know, my head just exploded. I mean, it was like my denial system was already in tatters. Anybody who was researching this stuff that had as much information as I had by that point would have long ago said, yeah, these are entities. I didn't want to believe that. You know, it just didn't make sense. I'm going, well, it's got to be their subconscious, or there's got to be something else going on. When they said our way of life, plural, that one sentence, it was like, boom, my denial system collapsed. That was it. It was gone. It was at that point that I knew for sure that these were entities. These weren't hallucinations. These weren't some figment of the patient's imagination. They were talking directly to me. And I said something like, well, tell them this. And the prisoner said, I don't have to tell them anything. They can hear what you're saying. I'm like, oh, you know, I hadn't thought about that before. And he also said, they can see everything around you too. So they can see you, they can hear you, you know? So here's like another entity that is, they could hear me whether they were inside the person or outside, you know, because when they get very strong, they will move outside of the patient and they'll start talking to them from the outside. And that's really freaky. You know, because now you have a discarnate something talking to you from outside, and it doesn't sound like your thoughts anymore. This is something separate outside you. They only do that when they feel they got you trapped, when they got you under control. You know, they won't do that before then. So this prisoner, he goes, that wasn't me. He goes, I swear that wasn't me talking. That was them. You know, and I think I asked him, I said, are you messing with me? You know, which would have been a dangerous thing for him to do. And he said, no, I'm not messing with them. That was them. They told you that. Okay. And I was freaked out. I mean, I freaked out. After he left, I closed my office and I just sat staring out the window for the rest of the day. It's like, where's this going? You know, I don't have any cognitive map of this. There's no information about this anywhere. You know, it's like, where's it going? Where is it headed? Now, how dangerous is it? You know, but I still wasn't really worried about it because I was thinking, well, these voices are in their heads. They might convince the patient to attack me. Okay. But I think I was aware enough to be able to sense something like that coming on. So I wasn't really worried about it. My dad's training. So, you know, I negated that. But I was still like, okay, where's this going? I wasn't so much worried about it because I'm going, well, these are not physical entities. They can't attack me physically. They may be able to convince one of these guys to attack me, but I think I'm acute enough to be able to pick that up when the patient's getting upset enough to back off. So I wasn't worried about that much. But where was it headed? You know, and this was clearly a shot across my bow, telling me I had no right to be there. I had no right to be doing what I was doing. All right. So I didn't stop. I kept throwing monkey wrenches into these patterns. And then I think it might have been even the same guy. I don't know. He comes in one day, and for what I had was a book called The Voice of Knowledge by Miguel Ruiz, who is a South American shaman. And I read a paragraph in there where he was talking about these things as if they were entities also. You know, they were negative entities and that they were feeding off of people. So it was the same thing that I saw. So I brought that book into the prison, brought this guy in who the voices had warned me. And I said, I got a paragraph here from this shaman. I want to read it to you and tell me what you think about it. Okay. So I started reading it, and I got to the part where it was talking about these entities being parasitic entities, negative entities, and that they were stealing, actually feeding off of people's energy. And I finished that sentence, and I looked up, and I asked him, well, what do you think? And he's staring at me like a zombie. He's, you know, he's just like, oh, you know, just like it's the focused zombie look. And I'm like, uh-oh, what's that all about? You know, he didn't say anything. I said, what do you think? He didn't say anything. He just sat there staring like a zombie. And I went, I got a sense he's going to attack. So I went, pushed my chair against the wall and faced him. So if he did attack, he wouldn't knock me over. You know, the wall would support the chair and I'd be able to kick him back and do something. I mean, at least I wasn't at a total disadvantage sitting in a chair that he could knock over. And he's just sitting there staring at me. And then behind my back, here's this eruption of sound. It was like crack, 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 crack. It sounded just like an arc welder. It was loud. Just like an arc welder. I mean, I have one. I know. It was like crack, 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 crack. And, yeah, I look and it jumped onto the wall to my right, and it's going up the wall at a 45 degree angle. Crack, 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 crack. I don't see anything. I don't smell anything. It's just this loud crackling. And I turned to him and I said, do you hear that? He says nothing. He just keeps staring. And I was afraid to take my eyes off of him, but I wanted to see if I could see what this was doing that. I couldn't see anything. I could just hear it. It was moving at a 45 degree angle up the right-hand wall of my office toward the ceiling. Once it got to the ceiling, I could keep my eye on him and the sound that this, you know, kind of real quick switch back and forth. Because I didn't want to take my eyes off him. I didn't know what he was going to do. That thing crackled all the way across the ceiling. And he's still sitting there staring at me like a zombie. And I'm totally freaked out of my mind. Not only is this guy acting weird, here's this crackling that's moving around my office, and it's loud, and it's not just 15-20 seconds, it's like 25-30 seconds. It's just going and going and going and going, and it's like, what's going on here? What's happening? And then it gets down to the bottom of the left wall, and it jumps into this Rubbermaid trash can by my left leg. Wow. And I bend over and I look down in there. There's nothing there. The inmate porter had cleaned it the day before. There's nothing in there. It's just an empty plastic bag. And then boom, it goes out just like that. The sound is, it goes dead. You know, and I look at this guy like I'm stunned. I mean, I'm just, at this point, I'm reeling, you know, and he slowly gets up and he goes, I gotta leave. And he's slowly gets up and he shuffles out of the office, and I'm going, yeah, get the hell out of here. Go, get to go, you know? And I'm sitting there, I'm like blown away. I mean, just what just happened? You know, I got no cognitive map for any of this. You know, there's no, where's this going? What just happened? And I get up and I examine the walls to see if there's any burn marks on it, because my association with crackling that intense has always been burn marks. Even if it's an electrical short, there's a burn mark. You know, with the arc welder, there's a burn mark. There's no burn marks anywhere. Not anywhere on the wall, not in the trash can, nowhere. And I'm like, it was like somebody just punched me in the head. And I'm like, what just happened? So I go out into the hallway and I look in the hallway. All the doctor's offices are locked. The nurse's office is locked. Social, all the offices are locked. Nobody's back there. There is no explanation for this at all. You know, so I'm like completely blown away. Again, lock my office, stare out the window, like stunned. I mean, just stunned. It was just like somebody hit me in the back of the head with a 2x4. I'm just staring out the window like, what is going on? Am I going crazy myself? You know, am I losing my mind? I mean, all these, and there was nobody I could talk to about this. Forget it. You know, I tried to talk to my wife about this once, and she goes, no, no, you shouldn't be picking through the minds of criminally insane people in the first place. She said, no, I don't want to hear it. You know, so there's nobody I could talk to, except the schizophrenics themselves. I mean, I could talk to them about this stuff. You know, it was like, so I had a foot in both worlds. You know, yeah. But didn't fully belong to either. And, you know, so I think, you know, 3 or 4 months went by before I got the courage to call this guy in again. You know, so finally I called him in. He shows up in my office and he looks good. I was expecting him to be a wreck. So I'm thinking if the voices could do that, they will destroy him eventually. No, he looked good. I was shocked. You know, and I said, you look good. I said, I was expecting you to be a wreck. He goes, I said, how are you doing with the voices? And he says, I'm keeping them under control. I'm doing what you told me to do. I haven't made any headway in getting rid of them, but they're not taking any more control either. You know, so it was like a Mexican standoff. And, you know, I asked him, I said, close the door. And I said, after some small talk, I said, did you hear that crackling in my office the last time you were here? And he goes, yeah, I heard it, but I'm surprised you did, meaning me. I said, what in the blazes was that? And he says, that was them. I said, them who, the voices? He goes, yeah, they were the voices. That was the voices doing that. And I'm like, okay, right away, it's like, They're affecting physical reality. They caused that crackling. That was a physical thing they were doing, which made me even more alarmed, because if they can affect physical reality, it could also somehow get at me.
Yeah.
So some way. And so I asked him, I said, well, what were they doing? You know, what were they doing? He goes, well, they were trying to scare you off. And I said, well, they did a damn good job of it. You know, and I said, you looked weird when you walked out of my office. You looked like you were in some kind of zombie state. I said, what were the voices telling you as you were leaving my office that day? He said, they were telling me to go get a shank and stick it in your gut.
Jeez.
Shank it. Yeah. Shank is a homemade prison knife. And I'm still thinking, oh, well, he wouldn't do that. I've been working with him for 6 months. He's made a lot of progress since we started. He wouldn't do that. And I asked him, well, then why didn't you do it? Just out of curiosity. He said, well, no one would give me one and I couldn't find one. I'm like, oh my heavens. Now, where is this going? Now, so that was a real wake up call. But yeah. I didn't stop, and I didn't stop. I kept going, until we started finding some ways to interrupt the patterns of these voices. Okay, and one of those patterns is to realize that these things are consummate liars. Now, even for the those of us who consider ourselves relatively normal, okay. When you get a negative thought, 90% of the time, it's a lie. Okay? Call it a lie. So when you start thinking negative things about yourself or anybody else. Now, Sherry Sweeney, my co-author, who wrote this book, she heard voices when she was younger. She beat them just by that tactic alone. By every time they show up, that's a lie. That's a lie. That's a lie. You know, you got that. They don't like prayer. They hate the 23rd Psalm. They hate Psalm 91. And that's another thing that can be done.
Did you say Psalm 91?
Psalm 91. They don't like Psalm 91. They don't like Psalm, the 23rd Psalm. They really don't like the 23rd Psalm. So if you repeat that every time they come, okay? They don't like the Gregorian chants. They don't like sage. So there's a number of things you could do, you know, to kind of weaken them. Don't get bored. Everybody has two guardian angels watching over them all the time. Ask them for help. They can't help you unless you ask. They're not allowed. They're not allowed to interfere with your free will. So they can't barge in there like these negative entities do and then just start feeding you garbage. Okay. The other thing is to find a MACE practitioner too, because in a lot of cases, what MACE calls as a negative identity can cause a lot of these same symptoms. Okay. And even if there is a voice there, an entity there, MACE will remove a lot of what is feeding them, because they feed off of trauma. They feed off of negative ideation. You know, they feed off of all that kind of stuff.
Wow.
So, you know, taking a look at all that in perspective. Okay, so I've worked in virtually every mental health setting there is in the U.S. I mean, in mental health centers, private psychiatric hospitals, county psychiatric hospitals, state hospitals, the state prison. I mean, I've got them all. Okay, none of those people are being helped by any of the stuff that they're going on there. No, nobody's being cured. Okay, and you consider now that there are more psychiatric drugs on this planet. There are more psychiatrists and psychologists on this planet than there has ever been in the history of mankind. And look at the mess we're in. The prisons are filled to overflowing. The state and mental hospitals are filled to overflowing. The mental health centers are overwhelmed. Nobody is being cured. Okay? The CDC reports 132 people kill themselves in the U.S. Every day, 132 people. Mm. Suicide is the 11th leading cause of death in the United States. And most of those guys are depressed, and they're depressed on the psychiatric mafia's antidepressant drugs. It hasn't impacted the suicide rate at all. In 2021, 48,000 Americans killed themselves. Last year, it was almost 50,000. 50,000 people, soldiers, died in Vietnam. Okay, in 10 years. Every year, 50,000 U.S. citizens are killing themselves. Year after year after year. And this is with as many psychiatric drugs as dump trucks loads. I mean, they have mountains of psychiatric drugs now. They're graduating more and more psychologists and more psychiatrists. This situation isn't getting any better. You know, between 2000 and 2018, suicide rates increased 37%. You know, an estimated 24 veterans are killing themselves daily. Okay. From 2006 to 2016, the suicide rate increased by 2% a year, with 1.4 million suicide attempts in 2017, and 47,000 deaths.
That is wild. That is wild. This is really taking a toll on I think, a larger amount of people than what we can, or at least me coming into this conversation, imagined. Earlier, you were saying some things that really kind of, you mentioned about the voices that everybody has, that, you know, the thoughts that come into your mind. And I could attest that it's something that I've never thought about before a whole lot. But I remember when I used to drive truck, there would be times that I would be standing there next to a guy on a forklift. There's always a guy on a forklift. It was the weirdest thing, but it was always a guy on a forklift. And I'd be standing next to him and he'd be signing the paperwork. And as he's looking down, signing the paperwork, this thought in my head would be, man, you could clock this guy in the face right now and he would never see it coming. Always a guy on a forklift. And you talk about the patterns. And I always thought that I just had a sick mind. I was just like, man, why do you always think about that when somebody's, you know, signing your paperwork on a forklift?
Yeah, that's them.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, underneath those, that idea, I think that a lot of people don't totally realize the depths of the matter. I had years ago, I'd say probably at least 3 years ago now, there was a guy that contacted me about his girlfriend, and him and his girlfriend wanted to sit down and talk with me. And he said that she was schizophrenic and that, you know, they wanted to sit and talk with me about what life was like, you know, being the boyfriend of a schizophrenic person. And we were planning the whole thing out. And then he came back to me and said that she's not going to talk to me, that she essentially, she was scared to talk to me because the voices told her that they didn't want her talking to me.
Right.
And
right.
So
I ran into that over and over and over again. You know, and they would actually make the patient miserable if they did talk to me.
Yeah. And so like, you know, she talked to me, and I think that was the introduction to me thinking to myself, I really think there might be something more to the schizophrenia issue than just, you know, voices in somebody's head.
Yeah. And that is true. You know, if they're running patterns, they can't be hallucinations, as the psychiatric mafia says they are. Now, you can see these patterns for yourself. I mean, it's not like they're not hidden up in some genetics lab or a biochemistry lab. Anybody who is living with, working with, or dealing with schizophrenics can go to my website at jerrymarzynski.com and see these patterns for themselves. They're right in front of your eyes. You know, nobody's, you don't have to believe anything. You can see it for yourself. Unlike this genetic stuff and this biochemical imbalance stuff that the psychiatric mafia and this big pharma comes up with. Oh, just trust us. This is what it is. Now, look at the money these guys are making. This is what's driving this whole thing. These people could care less if anybody's getting better. They don't make money by people getting better. They make money by treating people endlessly with these toxic drugs. So the antidepressant market in the U.S. only is expected to hit $1.98 billion by 2023. We're talking billion.
Wow.
Now, it's $15.98 billion. This is for antidepressants that are not fixing anything. Now, MACE will cure depression. Okay. The global antipsychotic sales, these are global, are $14.54 billion in 2021 and expected to reach $15.5 billion by 2022. $1 billion. On antipsychotic drugs that are rotting people's brains out. Look at how many people they're destroying slowly with these drugs. You know, another big lie of theirs is their DSM, their directory of mental illnesses. They have this big directory, they call it the DSM, with all these different mental illnesses, and it looks like a real scientific piece of work. You know, they have them all categorized, and these, you know, 303.10 and da 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 da, and all the characteristics and all these descriptions. It looks like it's a real scientific piece of work. The whole thing is completely made up. It's fabricated. There is not one objective test to verify any of those diagnoses in that manual at all. They're made up by a group of psychiatrists, two-thirds of which are associated with Big Pharma. They meet every few years, and they make up new mental illnesses to put into this directory. And then Big Pharma goes, well, can we make a drug to treat that thing? It's all a sham. It's a big sham. Well, I'm running out of time here.
Yeah.
I got another someplace I got to be in just a few minutes. Any questions right off the bat?
Heck no.
You know, I have here a transcript from one of the patients I worked with. I was going to read that if we have time. I have a letter from a psychotic killer who killed four people. He cut his girlfriend into a million pieces. They still haven't found her body. I got a poem written by him.
And is that the poem you sent me earlier?
I don't know what I sent you there. No, did I send you a story? I sent you a story,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you sent me a story.
Yeah, that's a story of one of the, that story took place in the emergency room.
So it's
a true story.
Wow.
True story.
Wow.
She had killed somebody too.
So the story, you're talking about the story called Black Toads.
Right.
Wow.
That took place in the emergency room when I was working psych crisis in emergency room.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, I might, if you don't mind, I might read it or something like that for the audience at some point here.
Okay, go ahead.
Listen, you said, do you have any questions? I could talk to you about there's so much, right? But I would love to maybe have you back on sometime and we can dive into more of a conversation. You did a fantastic job laying out how you got from where you started to now. And one thing you said was, don't get bored. And it's something that I'm notorious. I say it all the time to guys. I say a bored man is a dangerous man. And what you just said, what you just kind of laid out and then said, don't get bored. I'm like, man, that puts a whole other definition to what I mean. Like, cause I think when guys get bored, they tend to do things that they regret later. They get in trouble. Men need to have something to do. They need to keep busy. At least I find that for myself. And so
that's especially true of schizophrenics, man. That's especially true with them.
I believe it. You gave so much information here. The Psalm 22 or 23 and 91, very interesting perspective there because, I mean, I come from like what you're doing. I mean, what you're doing is you're laying the groundwork here for a spiritual realm that's impacting the physical realm. And you've experienced that when the crackling comes through. Man, like I could just talk to you forever, but I know we had a limited period of time today and we'll communicate moving forward and we'll definitely bring you back on and we can have more of a back and forth and stuff, but I really greatly appreciate you coming on and all the links to all your stuff that you sent will be in the description of this episode so people can check you out. But thank you very much for joining me.
Oh, you're more than welcome. If it wasn't for guys like you, I'd be out in the wilderness screaming at the trees. I mean, it's like, crying out in the desert. It's like, you're the people who are getting this information out to the people that need it. Because I can guarantee you, none of this is going to get out through the mainstream media or through the universities or through the psychiatric mafia or through psychologists. It's not going to get out. It's only going to get out through you guys. They're going to resist this to the max. They don't want anything to do with any of this.
Yeah. It's a perfect storm in the sense that you have this industry now of people who don't really buy into the narrative that's been given to us. And we also now have a voice. You know, 20 years ago, this was not possible. And so they control the narrative. But now there's a lot of people like me that just were like, listen, we're not doctorates, we don't know. We just don't believe you. And we're going to talk to people who might present other ideas. And so that's what we do. And, you know, listen, I don't have a reputation to lose. Everybody thinks I'm already an idiot. So it doesn't matter to me.
And I don't care either. I'm going to tell what I experienced. And nobody can change that.
Yeah,
I've experienced all these things. I've been there. Nobody's going to come and go, oh, well, you might be making a mistake. No, get out of my face. I've been there and I can go back there too. I mean, I understand what schizophrenics are hearing. I understand how they operate. You know, I can speak to them on their terms now.
Well, that's the show, everybody. I really hope you enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, please share the show with your friends. That's the best thing you can do to help the show grow. Share the show with your friends or enemies. I don't care. The people that you hate are often the people that hit the link because they think that you're sending them some thing to make them angry and they can't help themselves. So send them the link
they'll hit it, they'll love the show, and then you guys can love the show together and then become friends. I just solved all the world problems right here on The Confessionals. Okay. And until next Tuesday, stay safe, take care, and remember, the truth will set you free, but first, it'll piss you off. Bye.
Thought my old motto was a VA. I was working four cylinders to death. Put it on me, no teammate. Dreams running on fumes, no rest. You could bargain for my soul for a mansion and a couple billboards, no less. Yeah, thank God for a couple roadblocks. I don't know if I'd have stopped where the road ends. On the sidelines, trying to be the highlight, but under the bright lights, breaking all the guidelines. Yeah, Mr. Bull with no lifelines. Yeah, screaming, I don't need you. Fighting, but I'm free too. Neon lights make a path for my breath, like smoke in the cold every weekend. Spend years looking for the